Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, from New Orleans, Louisiana, where this program often originates these days, we are the sort of home base for a little while of an operation. It was originally bruited about to be called Operation Swamp Sweep, but when it started actually, in fact, this past Wednesday, it had a new name, Operation Catahoula Crunch. Sounds like a breakfast cereal, but no. No, it's an operation to round up some people to meet a numerical quota, as you may know. In a press release, Department of Homeland Security officials said the crackdown focuses on people with criminal records previously released by New Orleans law enforcement. That's reported by Axios, which also says the ICE main unit for removing immigration law violators has been arresting roughly 1,100 people a day in recent weeks, according to a government release from the in response to a Freedom of Information Act request. But according to Axios, fueling the larger arrest numbers is ICE's decision to also target people without criminal convictions or charges. Under previous president, people who hadn't committed another crime weren't prioritized for arrest and deportation. Agents now have a broader mandate and have been encouraged to make more what are called, quote, collateral arrests, unquote. I thought collateral meant something you provided when you were trying to get a loan, but now it's something you provide when you're going to be alone. And fortunately, the weather has been so cold in New Orleans this past week that many of the people they're looking for are staying indoors. That's the good news. Hello, welcome to the show.
Keep on trying to
from New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you. I'm really welcoming you. Like we're welcoming ICE and no, better than that, to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of this smart, smart world.
It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
Well, you've heard of smart toilets. I'm assuming a lot. But now comes the smart toilet camera. Yes, it is a wonderful world. A couple of months ago, Kohler, the plumbing company, well, the plumbing equipment company, announced that it's getting into the photography game with a smart camera designed to be installed inside a toilet. The Decoda was advertised as end-to-end encrypted. An engineer has shown this isn't true. The Decoda is advertised as a first-of-its-kind health tracker that analyzes gut health, hydration, and whether there is blood in a person's stool. Everybody wants to know that. A camera going inside a toilet is a sensitive matter, so Kohler was keen to stress that, quote, privacy comes first, emphasizing the lens only points down and data is protected with end-to-end encryption. But an engineer, Simon Fondrick Teitler, a software engineer and former advisor to the Federal Trade Commission, was skeptical. End-to-end encryption is for user-to-user sharing features, like on messaging apps. So while one end of the encryption is obvious, who or what is at the other end is confusing. He contacted Kohler. It became clear the other end is the company, best known for its plumbing projects. Quote, user data is encrypted at rest when it's stored on the user's mobile phone, toilet attachment, and on our systems, said Kohler. Data in transit is also encrypted end-to-end as it travels between the user's devices and our systems, where it is decrypted and processed to provide our service. Company says that we've designed our systems and processes to protect identifiable images from access by employees through a combination of data encryptions, technical safeguards, and governance controls, unquote. Nevertheless, it means that Kohler can access the data. It raises the question, what are they doing with it? This is from Petapixel, by the way. It turns out Kohler may be using the images to train an AI. Decoda works via an app, and when users sign up, they're asked to allow the company to use their data to research, develop, and improve products and technology. The Kohler Decoda costs just $1, less than $600. You saved a dollar. To use the app, users must pay for a subscription, which ranges from around $70 to over $150 annually, depending on which plan you select. Yes, there are plans. But, or and, as of the beginning of this month, mixed reality collaboration platform Microsoft Mesh is no more. Microsoft has directed customers to immersive events in their own Teams segment. The writing has been on the wall for Microsoft Mesh for some time, reports the British tech journal The Register. After a lengthy stint in preview, the service became generally available last year as a 3D world where users could hold meetings and events. Aren't you tired of holding meetings and events in this 3D world? Apparently not. The plan was that users could select a 3D environment and an avatar for themselves, and then, rather than perch on a kitchen table or grab the hot desking spot, immerse themselves in that environment. Microsoft had already announced Mesh's retirement as a standalone platform. December 1st marked the end. Users can no longer attend Mesh events. The mesh.cloud.microsoft website is decommissioned, and the immersive space 3D view and the ability to join a Teams meeting through the Mesh Quest app are also disabled. Microsoft Mesh, We hardly knew ye. It's a smart world, but it's getting maybe too smart. But now, news of forever chemicals. More than 520 chemicals have been found in English soils, including pharmaceutical products and toxins that were banned decades ago. That's because of the practice of spreading human waste to fertilize arable land. Just send it to Kohler. What research by scientists at the University of Leeds found a worrying array of chemicals in English soils. Close to half of the pharmaceutical substances detected had not been reported in global monitoring campaigns to this point. The anticonvulsants lamotrigine and carbamazepine were among the human use medicines reported for the first time in English soils. The category of chemicals of popular concern to scientists are emerging contaminants, your pharmaceuticals and other chemicals, which have not been widely studied for their impacts on the environment or on human health when they enter the food chain. Water companies treat human feces and remove some of the contaminants from wastewater. The resulting product is treated biosolids, the organic matter from human waste, often disposed of by being spread on fields as fertilizer. It appears that despite decontamination, hundreds of chemicals are leaching into the soil and in some cases staying there for a long time. They like it there. Several chemicals banned or withdrawn from use decades ago persist in agricultural soils. It's possible these chemicals will enter the food chain and be ingested by humans who eat food grown in these fields, according to a professor of environmental chemistry at the University of Leeds. It could also harm farm productivity if the chemicals inhibit plant growth or negatively affect soil health and plant health. She adds, some of these contaminants can affect and inhibit the nutrients taken up into crops. No, these aren't forever chemicals, just persistent ones. And now, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole III. Hey, it's a movement. It needs a lot of free labor. With the Olympic Games 2 summers away, organizers are ramping up efforts to recruit what could become the largest volunteer force in Olympic history. Volunteers have long played a central role in the success of the Games, supporting athletes, staff, and spectators across venues. As preparations accelerate for LA 28, organizers said community participation will be essential to be delivering a smooth and welcoming experience. Organizers are setting ambitious goals for volunteer recruitment. Reynold Hoover, a retired general and the chief executive of LA 28, says officials hope to build a volunteer pool of at least 500,000 people. That would far exceed the roughly 40,000 volunteers used during the Paris Games. Hoover said the volunteer network is expected to support not only LA 28 operations, but also the broader needs of the city, the county, and participating venues. You know, help Crypto.com Arena. I think they're going to need it. Oh, also concerns continue to mount around the main hockey venue for the upcoming Winter Olympics in Milan Cortina. Construction issues and logistical delays have caught the attention of the leadership of the NHL. The league remains committed to sending players overseas, but is closely tracking the situation, especially amid reports that the new Santa Giulia ice hockey arena is 3 feet too short, based on required Olympic dimensions. The arena is still under construction. Crews racing to finish the facility in time for February. Milan won its Olympic bid in 2019 Construction didn't begin until 2023. Now, organizers are now scrambling to meet deadlines. The delays have already pushed test events back. And the commissioner of the NHL has openly voiced concern in recent interviews, noting while the league receives constant reassurances from the IOC, lack of visible progress is, he says, hard to ignore. And the NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly has put the situation in stark terms. Asked about the percentage chance NHL players might not attend, he said, quote, depends on the percentage you want to place on the possibility the ring doesn't get completed. If there's no rink completed, there's no NHL players going to the Olympics. Unquote. The NHL has no control over construction and is forced to rely on updates from Olympic authorities while watching the calendar march by. This matters even more. I know, it seems to matter a lot already. No, even more, because the 2026 Games would mark the first participation by the National Hockey League in the Olympics since 2014. They gotta be there, because it's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. Well, I told you it's cold here in New Orleans this week, but you're hearing a crypto winter. Bitcoin slumped this week. The world's largest cryptocurrency is down more than 7%, on track for its biggest daily percentage fall since March. Last down early this week at 7.3%. The move follows Bitcoin's biggest monthly drop since mid-2021. It shed more than $18,000 in, quote, value, unquote, in November. A record amount of money rushed out of the market, making this the largest dollar loss, as I say, since May 2021. That was when a number of cryptocurrencies collapsed. Ouch. Adding to bearish sentiment around Bitcoin, Strategy, the largest corporate holder of Bitcoin, cut its earnings forecast for this year. Its shares were last down more than 11%. But wait, there's more. American Bitcoin Corporation, the cryptocurrency mining and accumulation company chaired by, yes, Eric Trump, plunged nearly 40% on Tuesday. According to the Financial Times, shares fell from Monday's close near $239 to roughly $190, those are dollars, in less than 30 minutes, triggering repeated volatility halts and wiping about $1 billion from the company's market value. I say market value. The company shares Bitcoin's name, but it is a publicly traded mining firm, not the cryptocurrency itself. The drop tied a politically prominent family's business fortunes to a market that has seen sharp price swings. Federal regulators have been working to define how crypto firms are supervised. The Securities and Exchange Commission says its crypto task force is focused on tokens, exchanges, and market structure. But trading in American Bitcoin was unusually heavy, volume about 40 times the daily average, according to the Financial Times, which says the drop coincided with the end of a lockup period that was tied to earlier financing, which made restricted early shares tradable this week for the first time. The near 40% plunge, repeated halts, and unusually high volume occurred on the first day that restricted shares could be sold. Timing matters because a lockup ending is the first moment early investors are allowed to sell. When a stock plunges at the same instant a larger pool of shares becomes sellable, it becomes a first major test of demand, without implying why any specific holder sold. The drop also landed on a stock that had already been sliding quickly. American Bitcoin peaked near $9.31 in September, has since fallen about 78% when it got to last Tuesday. The stock surged in its first days of trading after it arrived on NASDAQ in early September, and then it gave back most of those gains over the ensuing weeks. Eric Trump's American Bitcoin going down.
American Bitcoin, attention Eric Trump. American Bitcoin, I got a need to dump. Your value's going through the floor. I gotta get right out the door. Your price was once sky high. Now all I can ask is why. Oh, Bitcoin, better than a bank. American Bitcoin, now you're in the tank. I fell for your whole scheme. Was it just some Ponzi dream? I thought your name was gold. It was hot, now it's gone cold.
Yeah.
You still pitching happily like it's 2023. At least it's that above the floor back in 2024. Suddenly it takes a dive, end of 2025. Ask your dad to bring a fix, early 2026. Oh, Bitcoin, attention Eric Trump. American Bitcoin, I kinda need to dump, dump, dump.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Hey, we all like penguins, don't we? Apparently not. Penguins living off the coast of South Africa have likely starved to death en masse during their molting season. This as a result of collapsing food supplies, according to the Journal of African Ornithology. Two of the most important breeding colonies of the African penguin, Dasson Island and Robben Island, right there, 90%, 95% of the birds that bred in 2004 were estimated to have died over the ensuing 8 years as a result of food scarcity. That's a conclusion of a study by an international team of researchers from the South African Department of Forestry, Fisheries, and the Environment and the University of Exeter in England, published in that journal mentioned earlier. Quote, between 2004 and 2011, the sardine stock off West South Africa was consistently below 25% of its peak abundance. This appears to have caused severe food shortage for African penguins, leading to an estimated loss of about 62,000 breeding individuals, says the co-author of the study from the Center for Ecology and Conservation, based at the University of Exeter. The findings could have important relevance to management strategies. I don't even think they can get agents at this point, let alone to help secure the long-term survival of the birds. In 2024, African penguins were classified as critically endangered. Restoring sardine biomass in key foraging areas would seem to be essential for their long-term survival, say the researchers. African penguins, in case you didn't know, molt annually, shedding and replacing all their worn-out feathers with fresh new ones in order to retain their insulation and waterproofing. Yes, penguins. However, the temporary loss of this protection means the birds must remain on land and are unable to hunt during the molting process, which is about 21 days. To prepare for that period without food, the penguins have to first fatten up. They are evolved to build up fat and then to fast while their body metabolizes those reserves and the protein in their muscles to get them through molt, says the chief researcher. They then need to be able to regain body condition rapidly afterwards. So essentially, if food is too hard to find before they molt or immediately thereafter, they will have insufficient reserves to survive the fast. He adds, this is exactly the peril the penguins face and have faced in the last couple of decades. No comment from Willie the Penguin. Yeah, ask your dad. Coral reefs have long been celebrated as biodiversity hotspots. New research shows they have also played a much deeper role, conducting the rhythm of Earth's carbon and climate cycles for more than 250 million years. Published this week in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, a study reveals that the rise and fall of shallow water reef habitats have governed how quickly the planet recovers from major carbon dioxide shocks. So, let's keep killing the reefs.
Sleeping on a planter at the Port Authority, waiting for my bus to come. Seven scotch and sodas at the office party, now I don't remember where I'm from. I think I had a black wallet in my back pocket with a bus ticket and a picture of my baby inside. And if I make it home alive, I'm gonna get my shit together, 'cause I can't live like this forever. I know I've come too far and I don't wanna fail. I got a new computer and a bright future in sales, yeah, yeah. A bright future in sales, yeah, yeah. Morning, gonna catch a flight to Baltimore. Try to kill an hour with the whiskey sour. If there's time, I might have just one more. I gotta do some quick reading for the big meeting, but my head is spinning and I can't quite open my eyes. As long as I don't have to drive, I'm gonna get my shit together, 'cause I can't live like this forever. Gotta get my shit together, 'cause I can't live like this forever. You know I've come too far and I don't wanna fail. I got a new computer and a bright future in sales, yeah, yeah, yeah. A bright future in sales, yeah, yeah, yeah. A bright future in sales, yeah, yeah, yeah. A bright future in sales, yeah, 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 yeah.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show. No troops at the door yet. Now,
looks like must close.
Tesla registrations in several key European markets plunged in November from a year earlier. The U.S. EV maker continues to struggle to keep market share from falling faster. despite rolling out new versions of its best-selling Model Y. Why? Because we like you. Elon Musk's brand, however, sold more cars in Norway and Italy than in November last year. So, they still like him. Monthly registrations slumped by 58% in France, by 59% in Sweden, by 49% in Denmark, by 44% in the Netherlands, by 47% in Portugal, and by 9% in Spain. Tesla's overall market share in Europe dipped to 1.5% in the first 9 months of this year. The company's slowdown in Europe began late last year after Elon publicly praised right-wing political figures in Europe, setting off protests across the region. In November, a large fire at a Tesla dealership in southern France prompted investigators to launch a criminal probe, according to local media. Musk has toned down his political commentary since stepping down from Doge. But Tesla's European business has not recovered. Doge, by the way, has been declared over by the Trump administration. Every Doge has its day. Musk spent one day this week spreading and praising claims that white people are on the verge of extinction. Somali immigrants have no right to be in America, and nonprofits who support them are committing treason. He quoted or reposted numerous statements from other accounts, peppering his reports and his reposts with approving commentary like true and simply a fact. Large number were related to the Trump administration's ongoing investigation of alleged public assistance program fraud in Minnesota, where many defendants are part of Minnesota's Somali American community. He reposted commentary about a case involving a Somali immigrant who was convicted earlier this year of sexually assaulting a child. The accounts included UK far-right figure Tommy Robinson. Musk reinstated him to X after he was banned from the platform for hateful conduct in 2018. Musk, who has 14 known children, so he's doing his part to repopulate the earth, said if current trends continue, whites will go from being a small minority of world population today to virtually extinct. He also repeated his long-running assertion that immigration is a plot to put Democrats in power. That's linked with his long-running support of the Great Replacement conspiracy theory that immigrants are being imported by liberals, and particularly Jews, to displace white Americans. Quote, the far left imported voters to gain power, and it worked, unquote. He was also quoting a post that falsely claimed Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, quote, wasn't even elected by Americans. Unquote. In related developments, the Felon in Chief's administration released a document in the wee hours of Friday morning bemoaning civilizational erasure in Europe. That's a quote. The document, a national security plan about maintaining American dominance in the Western world, raises concerns that European nations aren't strong allies in NATO, blames a diversifying Europe. It's plausible, the document argues, without evidence, that within a few decades at the latest, certain NATO members will become majority non-European. No citation involved in saying, quote, should present trends continue, the continent will be unrecognizable in 20 years or less. It's fair to question whether they will view their place in the world or their alliance with the United States in the same way as those who signed the NATO Charter. The document was full of warnings about Europe's, quote, loss of national identities, unquote, and the need for American diplomacy to uphold European countries, quote, individual character and history, unquote. We want Europe to remain European, the document states. It also warns about migration policies that are transforming the continent and creating strife, unquote. Meanwhile, back in this country, direct from Mar-a-Lago, the most beautiful resort in the history of resorts. This is history's favorite president with another edition of Truth Social Audio brought to you by Trump Hair Tonic for that Pete Hegseth look. I'm proud to say that all of the staff here at Mar-a-Lago now speaks English. Too bad you can't say that about so many Democrat-run parts of this country. Like my distinguished aide Stephen Miller says, if we don't clean up the garbage, pretty soon ballots are going to have to be printed in more languages than visas. A lot of the faker-than-fake news got their panties in a twist this week because I used that wonderful word, garbage, to describe Somali immigrants in Minnesota as a state run by that drunken, incompetent governor. Actually, he's too drunk to be incompetent. If he had his way, the land of 10,000 lakes would soon be the land of 10,000 Somalis. Who wants to see that on a license plate? But like a lot of other problems, this is bigger than just the United States, although our problems are the biggest and greatest the world has ever seen. But Europe is having its own immigration crisis, mainly because it's even closer to the Third World, or as we called them back when I was growing up, the backward countries. As my friend Elon Musk told me, his dad says, if the Europeans don't get smart fast, their passport photos are going to be darker than orangutans at dawn. Nothing against orangutans, but last time I looked, they don't help keep the great tradition of Western Christian nationalism alive. One of the big forces killing that tradition is the fake media starting to employ more women as so-called journalists. Take it from me, I know a lot about women. They're much more at home in a beauty contest with a wonderful sash spanning the highlights than in a fake suit with a fake microphone in their hands. And their voices, when they ask one of their stupid questions, it sounds like they're demanding alimony. Who wants to hear that? Thank you for your attention to this matter, and stay loyal.
True Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Slippers, making your feet great again. So long.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet.
Well, there's this company called Holtec International, which sometimes builds sites for nuclear waste storage. But it's no longer going to move forward with plans to operate one of those in southeast New Mexico. This ends a multi-year effort marked by intense public resistance and legal challenges, according to Oklahoma Energy Today. The decision comes 2 years after the company received a federal license to construct and run the facility, which had been designed to hold 500 sealed canisters of nuclear waste for as long as 40 years. Holtec said in its announcement that persistent and organized opposition from residents, local leaders, and environmental groups ultimately made the project untenable to pursue. The company had faced widespread criticism from communities across southeast New Mexico. Many of them argued the project posed risks to public health, groundwater, and regional safety. Opponents repeatedly voiced concern during public hearings, community discussions, and environmental reviews, arguing the project did not align with the state's priorities for long-term environmental protection. But this is only 40... The anti-nuclear nonprofit Beyond Nuclear condemned the project early in the licensing process, labeling the planned site a, quote, dangerous dump. The group argued that storing high-level radioactive waste in New Mexico would establish what it described as a national precedent for large-scale centralized waste shipments across the U.S., arguing allowing the state to operate could trigger many thousands of mobile Chernobyl radioactive waste shipments transported across highways and rail lines nationwide. The proposed facility had been licensed to store spent nuclear fuel from commercial reactors across the country. The 40-year license period was expected to serve as an interim solution, while federal policymakers debate long-term storage options. New Mexico lawmakers and environmental advocates had previously sought stronger state-level restrictions on nuclear waste storage. Holtec's withdrawal may influence future regulatory actions on similar proposals. Would you like some in your backyard, please? We need to, you know, just for 40 years. Clean, cheap, safe, to unstored Demeter, our friend the atom. Now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
South Korea's biggest online retailer, Konpang, apologized over the breach of personal information from 33.7 million customer accounts through unauthorized data access. Quote, "We sincerely apologize once again for causing our customers inconvenience," said Park Dae-jun, CEO of the firm, which is the Amazon.com of South Korea. Lucky them. The incident is the latest in a series of data leaks at major South Korean companies. Representatives of the descendants of African slaves and indigenous peoples of Suriname this week formally accepted an apology from visiting King Willem Alexander of the Netherlands for widespread slavery during the colonial rule of the Dutch. He made the apology originally back in 2023, but it was accepted during a meeting and ceremony behind closed doors this week in Paramaribo, the Surinamese capital. Quote, "We accept the apology and the request for forgiveness with the full conviction that the king, with a clear conscience, wishes to cooperate in healing and restoration," said Wilgo Omen, representative of the indigenous communities. Bayland Alton, Illinois, the National Weather Service warning coordination meteorologist, says the big snow in that part of Illinois early this week came in much quicker, snowed much harder, and caused many more impacts than what was anticipated, even as late as early Monday morning. With that, Kevin Deitch sent out an email taking full accountability for what he called a poor forecast for today's snow. He said the Weather Service takes great pride in being your trusted source of weather information. It physically pains me when I see a forecast go this awry because I know many of the repercussions you're facing because of it. He assured the office will be looking into what they missed. He says they could have pivoted the forecast sooner, giving you more time to make your important decisions and ultimately help mitigate some of the impacts we're seeing this afternoon. And Law & Order actor B.D. Wong has apologized for making a racist comment online. Wong, whose roles include hundreds of episodes of Law & Order Special Victims Unit, Mr. Robot, and Jurassic Park, apologized on his Threads account for what he described as a racist comment. He wrote, quote, "I want to elaborate re a racist comment I posted to clarify that I recognize and accept the responsibility for how terrible it is." He said he was also wrong to try to explain anything, and I think that causes a further breaking down in folks' trust. Let me please spend the energy on how wrong I know it is to exploit a despicable racist trope in the supposed spirit of humor. I do know better, but again, no excuses. Very sorry for the hurt I've caused and for taking something lightly that's so deeply injurious. Unquote. This appears to stem from a reply he made to a popular Threads account, which has been screenshotted by multiple others, even though he deleted it. It shows a popular nature-based account with the account owner Mike Holston, who's black, posing with an unusual animal and asking, quote, "Name this animal, wrong answers only." Wong then allegedly replied, quote, "It appears to be a black man," unquote. Yes, it was a Wong answer. The apologies of the week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. About chemicals, more than 100 chemicals in pesticides, plastics, and other products that people are routinely exposed to stifle the growth of health-promoting gut. I said gut bacteria. According to a new study, health experts in recent years have increasingly focused on the importance of the gut microbiome and what might harm it. Humans have, on average, hundreds of types of gut bacteria, critical for digesting, managing weight, immune system function, and mental health. These bacteria, along with other types of microorganisms such as viruses and fungi, form what's referred to as the gut microbiome. Gut bacteria disruptions have been linked to a variety of health problems, including your allergies, your Parkinson's, and type 2 diabetes. The new study published in Nature Microbiology builds on previous evidence that certain pesticides and chemicals impact gut health. It cautions that most current chemical safety testing does not account for impacts to gut health, even though it's likely people are regularly exposed to many of the chemicals they tested. Quote, certain industrial and agricultural chemicals can inhibit the growth of gut bacteria and select for increased antibiotic resistance, said a researcher at the University of Cambridge's Medical Research Toxicology Unit, adding this could disrupt the normal function of the microbiome and reduce the effectiveness of antibiotics. But wait, there's more about microplastics. There's always more. For in a human, microplastics are very small, at less than 5 millimeters wide. But to an insect, microplastics might be the same size as the food they usually eat. Researchers reporting in Environmental science and technology from the American Chemical Society have shown that crickets can and will consume polyethylene microplastics if their mouth is larger than the plastic particle. The study suggests that crickets, and likely many other insects, cannot distinguish plastic from food, much like us. Previous research has shown that consuming microplastics negatively affects small animals like your insects, your snails, your earthworms. These plastic particles are sloughed off a variety of sources like garbage and fertilizer. Because of the plastic's wide variations in size, it's unclear how insects, which also vary in size, may respond to different particles. But crickets are generalists. You knew that. Which means they'll eat almost anything that's available, including pieces of plastic. And now,
we've got the ultra-modern knack of getting oil from the deepest crack. So give the boys just a bit of slack and say a hearty what the frack.
The process of fracking well brings up gas or oil from deep underground, but it also brings dirt and rocks that could be contaminated with radioactivity and other chemicals. An investigation by Inside Climate News and the Allegheny Front newspaper found that this waste is often sent to the same landfills as household trash. A patchwork of state rules allows it to slip by regulators, especially in Ohio. Among forested Appalachian hills in the tiny village of Amsterdam in eastern Ohio, the Apex Sanitary Landfill was built about a mile from one couple's house. Quote, there's times when you just couldn't even go out in the summertime to enjoy a cookout or anything because the smell was bad, said the homeowner, posting a class action lawsuit over the smell. A new company, Interstate Waste Services, bought the landfill in 2020. The smell improved, but the landfill continued to get bigger. This year, the Ohio Environmental Protection Agency increased the amount of waste it's allowed to receive, double from a decade ago. Well, there's more drilling. What's arriving there along with everyday trash is oil and gas drilling waste. And since 2023, facilities are no longer required to report shale drilling waste in their annual reports, says a spokesperson for the Ohio EPA. Some, he says, still opt to do so. Reporting was discontinued because the data was not consistent.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. Program returns next week at the same time over these same radio stations. How does that happen? And at a time of your choosing on the audio device of your choice. Go for it, baby. It'd be great if we could reconvene back then. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego and Hawaii desks, to Pam Halstead and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's program. An email address for this program, your chance to use it, and the playlist of the music heard here, and a lot of stuff to read and listen to, and maybe even enjoy, who knows, all at harryshearer.com. I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. And now I'm on Substack. Come join the party. The show comes to you from Sensory of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change's Easy Radio Network. So long from the Crescent City.